Welcome, everyone, to X Factor Files, where we investigate sometimes favorite characters because we're in a rotation. So there are different concepts, people, but you've caught on by now. But this is the rule of three with
a special guest.
As always, a special guest. This one is a very special guest.
Yay.
We have Demanda Martini here. Demanda, how are you?
I am great. How are you guys today?
We are doing fantastic as well. We are recording this a bit in advance. So this episode, everyone's listening to it in March, but we're in February. So we just got done with Valentine's Week and
some snow that we dealt with.
Yeah.
And I only lost traction a few times.
Oh, that's good. And the snowblower started, which was a big thing.
That's a fucking miracle.
Yeah. Before we started recording, we were talking about, you know, snow totals and things like that. And last winter, the snowblower just wouldn't start. And it was such a winter of heavy, dense, sizable accumulation, like 2 feet at some points. And
even when it was light and powdery, it was 2 feet, and you have a very long driveway.
And the snowblower wouldn't start. And my over the summer, because we just shoveled and I got like an electric shovel to sort of help, and I would have to hold it up and do layers and just cut down. It would take me like 2 hours to do.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
It was terrible. My cousin's husband came over this summer working on something else. And we're like, hey, you're good with motors. Can you look at the snowblower? Because it wouldn't start. He started it on like the first pull. And he's like, oh, yeah. Well, sometimes they don't like to start when it's cold. And my response was, that's its fucking job.
Right. Like, you're fired. You're fired. What do you mean you don't start when it's cold? That's literally your entire purpose.
I know. But it started this week. And okay. It was amazing. I got the whole driveway done, including like shoveling the steps and everything, within 45 minutes. It was wonderful. I walked like 2 miles, in the course of it. So I got my steps in. And we are talking about a character who originally came from a colder climate as well, but probably a little less snow than we see sometimes in the northern United States. So Demanda, who did you pick?
So I picked one of my favorites. And so like most people who have followed me on social media and know like the, you know, like the characters that like I'm sort of known for would think that I would be picking Dazzler today, but I did not pick Dazzler. I love her. I have done a lot of her looks, yada, yada, yada. Or they would think that I'd pick Kitty Pryde, who was my introduction into the X-Men universe. But kind of like my dark horse favorite character, like, you know, it's hard to like rank and like put people, like it's always changing, always rotating, but another one of my favorite characters is Betsy Braddock, so I'm very excited to get to talk about her today. She's the cool purple-haired British model lady who's also a charter pilot and a spy. Also comes from another universe, the other world. So it's like, is she a hybrid? Is she not? We don't like. It's kind of like always left a little ambiguous of like the other world people, because they are like magic, but also I guess there's also like quote normal people who live there. It's interesting. She's cool. She's got like a cool backstory. The issues that we're going to be talking about today, because it's called The Rule of Three. So yeah. You asked me to choose three issues that I think kind of like really embody the character. So the three stories that I chose today really kind of showcase Betsy and sort of her growth as a character from joining the X-Men. I also have an honorable mention because, again, I love her. Yeah. I also did want to briefly mention that as of the recording, I also have just come out of Farpoint Con, which is a Star Trek convention in Baltimore, and I know you guys are also super Trekkies.
And
that was a lot of fun, and I love getting to go to Farpoint. And so I got to do a brand new Lwaxana Troy number as nude Luoxana. I had a stoned titties, vagina, and ass. It was great.
That's awesome. We just watched a Luoxana episode right before recording with you. It was on Pluto TV randomly.
It was the DS9 episode where she has Xanthi fever and
imposes
her amorous feelings on everyone. And it's just such a great episode. I just love her so much.
She, even though, like, in the great, like, canon of Star Trek, she's really not in that many episodes, but she really makes, like, a lasting impact on a lot of characters.
Yeah.
One of the Star Trek gays has pointed out that DS9 does such a good job with that, because if you look at the total number of episodes that someone like Nog or Gul Dukat or Kai Winn are in, and it's not, or Garak even, and it's not many, but they just have such an outsized influence on it because they're so iconic.
Right.
And I feel like DS9 gave Luoxana so much development and room to play.
Yeah.
So at first I was kind of worried about doing this like nude Luoxana, because I was like, Farpoint is a fairly family-friendly convention. And then I remember that like that episode where she is nude like several times, the entire time she's like hanging out with Alexander
Rozhenko
in the mud bath.
So I was like, it's fine. I'm also wearing 800 layers of spandex. But also with Farpoint Convention, I got to meet Cal Dodd, the original voice of Wolverine and still going to be Wolverine in X-Men 97, and debuted my Val Cooper from X-Men 97 cosplay, which did really well in the socials. It was super fun.
I got
some notice from some of the creators of the creative team behind X-Men 97, which was also awesome. It was a really good convention. I got almost zero pictures the entire weekend. .com keeps me super busy. I was barely at like my table the entire weekend. But it was a good time. So shout out to Farpoint if you're a Trekkie and in sort of like DMV Pennsylvania area, because it is like in that part of Baltimore that you're really getting close to like the Philly border. So if you're kind of in that area and would like to come down and hang out with us in February, please come to Farpoint 2025. Betsy Braddock. Yes.
Sorry, one more tangent.
Yes.
On the socials, when I saw that you were as Tasha Yar.
Yes. Have
you seen the Star Trek Defiant Annual all about Sela and Tasha?
No.
It's good. Ooh. Highly recommend. And I had a very hard time choosing between two of the variant covers as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's such a good background, and I feel like you would like it.
Send me like the name of it like in the DMs, and I will 100% look that up.
I'm so behind on the current Star Trek comics. I'm waiting to binge them at some point, like have a weekend in and just like sit down with a stack, because I tried keeping up and I just couldn't.
Yeah. And
keeping up with comics is very hard, which is why I mostly keep up with comics through social media and sites like uncannyxmen.net, because it's so hard and very expensive. And like back when I used to like literally collect weeklies, not only was it was also like somewhat convenient because there was the comic book store like on my way home. So it's like on Wednesdays, I could stop there, pick up the things. This was in the Utopia era into like Age of X. That was mm-hmm. kind of like the last time I like really collected weeklies. It was awesome. And then that comic book store closed, and then I was like, okay, well, I guess I'll just, you know, I'll have to find a new comic book store. And then I just got super busy with, you know, life and stuff, and it just hard.
Adjectiveless Star Trek is good. There's a lot of things to love about it. And it's on its second plot line now. And then I sort of forgot what was happening in Star Trek Defiant in the regular issues, because I got one and I'm like, what the fuck are they doing? But that's okay.
Speaking of Tasha, this past summer at Fan X in Salt Lake City, I did not realize that Denise Crosby was going to be a guest, or I would have brought Tasha Yar, but I don't. But if for anyone who's ever been to Fan X in Salt Lake, all of the celebrity guests, and they have a million of them. They had everyone from the Backstreet Boys to the cast of Saved by the Bell to a lot of the cast of Star Trek Next Generation. It was just like this huge, crazy, wide variety, like the cast of Back to the Future. It was crazy. But they keep them all in like this one like back corner where you, so no one's allowed to like take pictures unless like you pay for them or whatever. But like you're just allowed to just like walk around and just like say hi. Like literally just like,
that's so cool.
How are you? Awesome. It is really cool and it's very welcoming and like everyone's kind of chill. It was really awesome. So as we were walking around, Denise didn't have anybody in her line at that moment. And I was dressed as Taro from the Hellions, which is also kind of a Trek kind of uniform. It is kind of very Deanna.
Yeah.
It's Deanna like, would the wear little that. Like the little triangle logo of the Hellions. So anyway, so as I'm walking up, I was like, hi, Denise, I'm very sorry that I'm not dressed as you today. And she went, wait, you do me? And I was like, yes, I do. And she was like, you have pictures? And I was like, yes. So I showed her pictures and she was like, oh my gosh. And I was like, and I do. And I was like, and last year at Farpoint, she was like, Farpoint. She's like, that's in Maryland, right? And I was like, yes, like that's where I'm from. That's kind of like my home convention. I'm like, I get to do a drag show there every year. And last year I did a number as you. She was like, you do a number as me? And I was like, yes. And so I told her that I do, the number is The Rhythm Is Gonna Get You by Gloria Estefan, but I take out the word rhythm and I make it Abraxas.
Oh.
And so like I die several times on stage. And I also put in like this, like a spoken word part. It's a quote of hers from YouTube that I found where she talks about how the producers were only cared about like how tight her uniform was. And like, it was like kind of uncomfortable. And like, you know, it was all about like her being hot. And she was like, oh, shit, I said that. And I'm like, it's on YouTube. She was like, damn it, they put everything on YouTube. So I showed her a picture of me and my friend Logan Stone as Beverly Crusher. And Gates McFadden happened to be at the next booth. And she just went, Gates, stop whatever you're doing right now and come here. And it was very awesome. And I got to tell her the story about when I was younger. And I distinctly remember we just came home from seeing Roger Rabbit in the movie theater. And we came home and I turned on, I think it was in DC, it was Channel 20 that Next Generation was syndicated on. And it was the episode that she died. And I was so inconsolable that my dad had like take me outside and like walk me around. Because I was like so upset. I was like, she's my favorite. And I can't believe that she died. And she was like, oh, that's so sweet. So anyway, Denise Crosby yeah. is so lovely. And that's, I can't say enough how much I enjoy her.
Yeah. I have one more related Star Trek thing.
And then we'll get to Beth.
Yes. And then we'll get to Beth. Right. We promise everyone listening, this isn't one of our Star Trek episodes. It is actually about X-Men. I've gone back and forth with Alicia from the X-Wave podcast because mm-hmm. he's been reading a lot this year. I've been reading a lot. And our local comic store has had a bunch of Star Trek novels out for like $2 each. Mm-hmm. So I just keep buying them. And one I read in the past week is The Battle of Beta Zed. So it's set in the Dominion War, talking about the liberation of Beta Zed. And Luoxana plays a prominent role, of course, in the Resistance. So I recommended it, or I recommend it now to you, Demanda.
Okay.
Find that paperback. I'm sure it's at like Half Price Books or something that.
I only wish that you'd have told me like before I went to Farpoint, because I guarantee it would have been at one of the vendor booths.
And I didn't know until I read it like this past week. And I'm burning through these novels, like on average, like 1 to 2 a week at this point. Because they're really easy reads. But this one was legit good. The characterization of Deanna and Luoxana, spot on, because some of the early ones, they do not get the characters right. So especially TNG when it was still running. I just read another one and finished it yesterday. It was so bad. But I think I'm going to start putting reviews of this out on like my Medium account for like the two people who want reviews of Star Trek novels that are 25 to 35 years old and care about it. Yes, I'll send it to you so you can just keep your eyes peeled. And when you see it, you're like, I heard that one was good.
Yes. Sort of thing. Like quite literally, if I wait until next the next con, like next year, I will just be like, where is that email from Daryl? Because I want to like get it and then be like, here's me as Luoxana holding this book about Luoxana Troy.
Yes. All right. So everyone, now we get to Betsy Braddock. So how do you want to take these issues? Do you want to take them sequentially? We let you drive.
So I think I'm just going to go canonically as they were released. I don't know. I feel like anyone listening to an X-Men podcast at least has some semblance of like character history and origin. So like, I'm just like going to briefly. So Betsy Braddock is the twin sister of Brian Braddock, who is Captain Britain in our universe. She was originally introduced as kind of like his sister, who's a charter pilot. And through a series of adventures, she realizes that she has precognitive powers. Then eventually there's like this section of time where she's like not really around, but she comes back and now she has purple hair. She's a fashion model on the cover of like every magazine, but also secretly part of Strike, which is sort of the British version of S.H.I.E.L.D. and becomes Captain Britain for a while when Brian is you know off duty. And through a series of, because like this is like the early 80s when comic books are really dark and gritty. Like this is like that Dark Knight Rises kind of era where things are just, bad things happen to people all of the time. And so Betsy, who has always wanted to be an adventurer, gets her eyes ripped out by the Slave Master. She is then captured by Mojo and is brought to sort of the American audiences through a New Mutants issue where they deal with Mojo and all of this nonsense. So the first issue that I chose is Uncanny X-Men 213, which seats us directly in the middle of the Mutant Massacre crossover where the Marauders have gone down and killed all the Morlocks and everyone, like, so I have like the giant hardback collected Mutant Massacre edition. So, and it has all of the tie-ins. There's the Daredevil issues, there's the Thor issues, the X-Factor, X-Men, New Mutants, like everything's in here. And so this issue, even though, so Betsy is now at the mansion, it's kind of like a guest of the New Mutants, but is there. And because Jean is still thought dead because X-Factor and the X-Men haven't like gotten back together, and Xavier is in space, and Magneto is now like the leader of the school, they don't have a telepath. So they're like, oh, we have a telepath now. We have someone who can like help us coordinate all of the crazy shit that's going on. And you know, they've already fought the Marauders once, and so Kitty is injured, Kurt is injured, Colossus is injured. So like the X-Men are also like low on numbers, and they're like, oh my gosh, like we've got to like figure out what's going on. So this issue starts with it's really from Betsy's point of view, and she is using Cerebro to sort of coordinate the efforts of the X-Mansion patrolling, trying to figure out like what's going on. And then they are then attacked by Sabretooth. And so the reason that I chose this issue is because it really, like obviously, so Chris Claremont, as we all know, he gets like his favorite characters and he wants to like put them in like the things that he's doing at the time. We've seen that over and over again with Jessica Drew, Carol Danvers, now Betsy. So these characters that he's like helped create and other things, he's like, oh, well now I'm doing this flagship book that is like doing really well. So I'm going to pull them into this book. So that way I get to write them because they're mine. Nice. And because he was, you know, doing really well at this point, I think Marvel was just like, sure, you can do kind of whatever you want. Like, go for it.
Yeah, because Betsy, I mean, he originated her in Marvel UK with Captain Britain. So he sort of knew her voice. And a lot of the time, especially in this era, one, you couldn't really use the X-Men without Claremont writing it and passing everything by him. So he could be like, yep, this is good for you to do in this issue with like Colossus appearing or something.
Right.
Or just like you said, it was ownership of the character. So it's like, I love Betsy. She's a charter pilot like my mom. And
Right.
Because his mom was a pilot. So everyone was a charter pilot.
Me and my friend Dax have said numerous times, there are three jobs that women were allowed to have, and it's charter pilot, fashion model, or housewife. So they had to be one of those three things at any given time.
Oh, that explains that Alpha Flight issue. Yeah. Or the X-Men issue with Alpha Flight in it.
Yes.
Yes.
And also, Madeline Pryor. What was she? Oh, a charter pilot. Carol Danvers, she started out, well, she was like more of like a fighter pilot, but still, she was a pilot. Like, yeah. he just did that with so many characters. So anyway, so this book really kind of delves into Betsy's insecurity. So again, she's already been a failed superhero. Like, she's already had that whole storyline. And she continually needs sort of rescued by other people. But she also will always throw herself in the middle of it. And that's, I think that's just one of the things that I really like about her. So, like, this whole issue, she's in this very soft, frilly pink dress, because she is not a member of the X-Men as of yet. And so she's just, like, in this very, like, British conservative lady pink dress. And, again, trying to do her best to be, like, I'm going to help everybody. This is what I'm doing. Like, I want to make sure that, like, I'm doing what I should do. And when Sabretooth attacks, she sort of like realizes, oh, I need to get him out of the mansion, because we have all of these people in the sick bay, and Moira and Sharon are in there, and like these people won't be able to defend themselves. So she starts running away from them to get Sabretooth to follow her, which again, smart move to detriment to herself, because like against Sabretooth, she's like, oh, well, I'm not going to be able to fight him physically because, you know, she can't. But like even in some of the first interactions she has with him, also shout out, this issue is also drawn by Alan Davis, who is one of my absolute favorite artists. So, I love that.
And the inker on this issue was Paul Neary, who just passed away.
Yes. Who also had such a great relationship with Alan Davis.
Yep.
Doing a lot of his stuff. But like even as she's running away from him and obviously fearing for her life, she still turns back to look at Sabretooth and she's like, prove it. Chase me. I dare you. And it's like she's like asking for it. And like she's kind of getting like the thrill of being chased. One of my favorite panels is she continues to like pick up like random weapons. And at one point she grabs swords off the wall. And if you're a crazy person like I am, who has read some of the old UK issues, one of Betsy's first appearances, when she gets into a fight with Brian, like something's attacking them, she literally runs up to a wall and pulls an axe off. She is just this blonde woman. At that point, I don't even think she has, like, she's discovered her mutant powers yet. And she's like, oh, someone's fighting my brother? Let me get a battle axe.
Yes. And people, it's still in print right now. It's the Captain Britain omnibus that's out there.
Thanks to Connor from Cerebro Podcast, I think it's been selling really well.
Yes. And it's one of those, I mean, I have way too many omnibi. That seems like the plural. and so I sort of know what sites to go to, and you can sort of chart it. And like the Captain Britain one, everyone, you can get it for real cheap, because it's one of the omnibuses that's just sort of sitting in warehouses right now, because not a whole lot of people are picking it up, but it's legit good. Like that and the Knights of Pendragon one, you can get it super cheap. So,
So again, and because it's Claremont and he knows this character, and it's like, he's like, I've done this before, but I'm now introducing this character, Betsy, to this American audience where they may not have read Captain Britain or even like the New Mutants issue that she was introduced to America in. But so like they don't know these things about her. So he's kind of doing like these callbacks to that Marvel UK version of the character, which I think is so great. And again, like she's getting kind of down and dirty with Sabretooth, which is insane. Like insane. And then she gets sort of rescued by Storm, and then Wolverine jumps in, and again, like, she, she's trying to explain to them. She's like, no, I need to be a part of this. They're like, girl, you're in danger. Like, you need to stop. Like, you're literally just this purple-haired woman. But she is like, nope, I'm gonna be a part of this team. I'm doing the stuff. And she really gets in there and sort of distracts Sabretooth enough with her psychic powers that Wolverine gets an upper hand and they both tumble off the side of a cliff. And then at the end of the issue, she gets her iconic and one of my most recent favorite cosplays that I have done, the pink like suit. And it's like, girl, you just proved the fact that you are very vulnerable physically and you still get the most frilly, most feminine, most ridiculous costume, which I love, and the fact that I now get to put it on my body. I love it. It's so dumb. It's so feminine. Like that cotton candy pink with this big like chiffon ruffly sleeves. Like it makes me feel so pretty. And my drag is really heavily inspired by comics, obviously. Mm-hmm. And Alan Davis in particular, because I was an Excalibur kid growing up. So the way that he draws women is still very like hippie and voluptuous and lots of curves. And so like this image at the end of this issue of Betsy first appearing in this pink costume, like that's my drag body. Like that is my goal at all times. That's what I want to look like. And I feel like I have done that.
Alan Davis did Excalibur's Cross Time Caper, right?
Uh-huh.
I just finished that while we were in the vet's office.
Yes.
Waiting for Nick to be seen.
So I got the issues over to him. That was like a year ago. And I'm like, you really need to read the Cross Time Caper.
It's good.
Like, it's a good introduction to Excalibur. It plops you right in. You don't need to learn a whole bunch of backstory. You don't need to suffer through some beats at the beginning of it where it introduces some things that are quintessentially Excalibur, but you're like, what are these wolf things running around?
Right.
Like, it's much, I feel if anyone wants to read Excalibur, start with Cross Time Caper, then you can bounce back to the beginning
right
to see what's sort of going on, because it picks a lot of those threads back up after the Cross Time Caper. Like,
I happen to be really lucky when I started reading comics. So my cousin had introduced me through the trading card series, and then he had Excalibur number 11, which is what the issue is where they get stuck on the train that takes them on the Cross Time Caper.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like kind of interested in like, because it's like post Inferno and then like into Cross Time Caper. And so I was like kind of like, I don't know, you know, I don't know what's going on, but I want to pick up this book because, like, again, I got introduced through Kitty and Rachel. So I was like, this is the book that I need to pick up. And the issue that literally came out the week that I went to the comic book store and paid my own money, so it was the first comic book I ever bought with my money, was Excalibur 40, which is the Trial of Lockheed. And really what it does is it just explains the origins of Excalibur. So like, I knew, I kind of knew who Kitty was, I kind of knew who Nightcrawler was, and I kind of knew who Rachel was from the trading cards. And I was like, okay, these are X-Men, whatever. But I had no idea who Megan and Captain Britain were. So that issue number 11, I was kind of confused as to who these people were. And that issue, again, being the first book that I read, I was like, oh, I don't know who these people are. Now I can, like, read whatever. So I also kind of recommend that book.
Okay.
To new Excalibur readers, because it really kind of gives you enough backstory that you're like, oh, yes, I know who these people are. I can confidently then read anything Excalibur and at least know who they are.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to Betsy.
Yes.
Yeah, that art, like the flowiness of it, makes so much sense. Now that you say that, that's the same same art, right, as those Excalibur issues. And like, just like off the shoulder, the slit sleeves, those random ribbons coming down off her wrists, like,
right, which again are so easy to grab and like rip, and like they're so So the other thing is, like, I love the way Alan Davis draws, especially female hands. And I posted this a while ago on my social media. I had done a drag show where it was like a ballad show. So it's all just like ballads. And there's one of the photographer of that night took a picture of me and I am doing like Alan Davis hands. And I'm like, how do you know you're an Alan Davis fan without knowing you're an Alan Davis fan? It's like my hands even do. And that's one of the reasons that I love getting acrylic nails, because in this last image of Betsy, you can see he does like the pointed fingers, that way you know that she's got nails. Mm. Also, one of the reasons that I love when he draws Rachel, because even in like her Phoenix costume, she always, it's like, even though we all know that like Rachel is kind of butch, she was like, no, I would also like to get my nails done. We still do nails, because yes. if you're not wearing nails, you're not doing drag. Not really, it's a joke. Nobody come for me in the social medias about wearing nails.
I may be a hound hunting mutants, but I also pay attention to my cuticles. So.
Exactly. Listen, how can you have claws and not try to keep your nails strong?
Right.
But anyway, I like the issue is such a great introduction for Betsy into then the X-Men universe and becoming a part of the team. Mm-hmm. And again, it shows kind of like her being self-sacrificing, which is sort of like a common theme in a lot of her stories. It shows about her like sort of being recklessly physical with a lot of like villains, where it's like, girl, no, like, you know that this has ended badly for you several times in the past. Like, not once, but several times in the past. Like, mm-hmm. Stop just jumping at people who are physically stronger than you. And also, like, a bit of, like, her calculated nature, where she is like, what do I need to do right now that is going to be more beneficial than other stuff? Like, oh, I need to get Sabretooth out of the mansion, so let me start running away from where he needs to not be. Again, just sort of like these sort of common character traits that Betsy has. So that was issue number one. Issue number two that I chose is, and I've talked about this several times on other podcasts and things and social media, my absolute favorite issue of all time, so much so that I own two copies of it. It is also an issue that I also remember buying from a comic book seller in the middle of my mall, like in the early 90s, in a back issue bin, because for those who remember, so again, I got into comics through trading cards, and they released a trading card set of the X-Men leading up to X-Men number one that was all Jim Lee art. Not like the trading cards was like character cards, mm-hmm. but the one where it was just like images from the comics telling pretty much from, I want to say, X-Men 256 up through the Muir Island saga and into X-Men number one. And it's all just Jim Lee art. So this was really, for me, this issue was like a really big introduction into like X-Men back issues, Betsy as a character, and just sort of like got me into the whole thing. So like, it took me a long time to sort of put together that this purple-haired woman that I see in a pink costume, or like the armored costume from her later Outback days, is the same Asian woman that I was seeing in current comics. Mm. It took me a long time to sort of put those things together, because even in the comic book and also then reading this issue, there weren't any pictures of her in like her purple-haired British form to like be able to, again, I was 7 or 8 maybe at the time, maybe 9, when I was like reading these. So like, you know, we all read these comics, but it's like there's so many things like our little brains don't like put together, and we just like mm-hmm. move on with our lives, because it's one of those like, don't worry about it, you'll figure it out later kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. But so this issue is the infamous body swap issue, which I know is problematic, and I have talked about it several times, being like, I understand reading it from a 2024 lens, it is very problematic. It like a trope of comics about changing someone's race or gender or whatever is kind of popular, you know, for a long time. You know, there's like the infamous issue of Lois Lane becoming black for a day, which is also wild to me that like that was the whole thing that they did. And Chris Claremont has since mentioned that like this whole thing was meant to be like plastic surgery or magic by Spiral. And that it was only supposed to last this arc and then she was supposed to go back. But because of the popularity, aka the sexiness of the Asian ninja costume that Jim Lee did and the little straight fanboys going completely bonkers over it, that it just sort of stuck. And so then he had to sort of just keep writing it that, oh, she's now, you know, this Asian woman. And again, the original intention was to be that it was magic plastic surgery. It was Body Shop. It was the same reason that Lady Deathstrike and all the Reavers, like it's this sort of semi-permanent body modification. It was not body swapping. And then later they decided to retcon that, which we'll get into, which kind of fixed it, but also didn't fix it. But the reason that this is my one of my favorite issue is, again, it's a, without her being the narrator, like from her point of view, it is still very much a sort of character exploration of Betsy. And in the sort of brainwashy nonsense that happens, it starts with Betsy being this little blonde child, again, charter pilot. But she's also dreaming of being a fighter pilot. And getting in a fight with, and also interestingly, when Spiral appears in this child sort of fantasy, Spiral looks very much like the adult blonde Betsy that we see later.
Yes.
So it's very interesting that like these layers, and it could be that, Jim Lee just draws hot, sexy blondes kind of the same. Could be, or it could be like, no, we're creating you kind of like in this image because the whole point is like brainwash you. Mm-hmm. And then she's got her brainy idiot brother Brian. That again, it's like kind of like this cute little play, but also just showing like Brian was always the one who was like the book smart, wanting to do the right thing, yada yada yada, and she was the one who like action, adventure, like let's go, I want to do it. But she, you know, quote unquote, didn't have the body because she's a girl. And like she even goes on to tackle him and it's crazy. So the sort of the story within the story is Betsy's going through her past to collect the Mandarin's rings in order for her to be brainwashed into becoming Mandarin's new assassin.
It's so confused.
Reading the book, like you don't really get that part until later. It's one of those things where when you're reading it, you want to ask your friend, be like, what does this mean? It's like, if you read the rest of the book, it will kind of make sense later. Like, just keep reading it. Like, you know, that friend who asks you a million questions when you're watching a movie, it's like, you could just watch the movie and like, it'll be explained at some point.
Mojo and Spiral showing up being creepy in the background all the time. And I was like, who are these people? Like, it looks sort of like Mojo, and then eventually it's like, oh no, that is Mojo, but is it? And yes. Like, oh, that's Spiral. I only know her because she fights Shatterstar a whole bunch. So
yes, so kind of reading this book out of the context of all the other things, because like that's also kind of like another Claremontian thing, is that he's always playing sort of a long game and also always making like back references. Yeah. And without the sort of like benefit of reading a lot of back issues, like it's one of those things that like you don't necessarily need to know, but if you get it, you get it, kind of a thing. Like, so like, for example, this image again on page 8 where Betsy gains one of the rings that Spiral gives her, and as she turns around, you see Mojo and Spiral behind her. It's like, if you understand that that's Mojo and Spiral, you get it. If not, you're like, oh, here, look at these creepy people. Like, oh, I wonder what this sinister plot is. I bet it's going to be explained later. You know, kind of a deal. So anyway, as the story moves forward, we then get to the point where, you know, we see Jamie, who was sort of like the, you know, dashing, carefree brother. And at this time in continuity, I don't think a lot of people even knew who Jamie was, because I don't think, outside of this issue, I don't think Jamie was really ever brought up, because I think after he was left to die with, like, what's his name, the croc guy? I can't remember. Is he, like, Doc Croc, something like that. The whole thing where he's like trading in slaves in Africa. And Brian just sort of like, he's like, no, you're a terrible person, Jamie. I'm leaving you here for them to do whatever it is that they're going to do to you. Like, he was kind of not mentioned until then. Jamie makes his appearance much later in the Excalibur series. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like this weird, like, we're bringing Jamie, but we're not going to talk about it. But here he is.
I didn't know that Jamie was a race car driver because of the crosstown timekeeper.
Yes.
And he's actually clothed and not just like in a weird marionette position in underwear.
Yeah, just naked all the time in the later series. Because like in the Marvel UK, Jamie was like Brian's like sidekick for a while. Like he would like get in on some of the adventures like Betsy would. And then eventually he's like, Jamie's been kidnapped. And it's like, he wasn't kidnapped. Like the people are saying he's a terrible person and we're going to make him pay for his crimes. And Brian's just like, cool, got it, I'm out. which is crazy pants, which also we'll kind of touch on in my next issue that we're going to talk about. So anyway, we then get to the point where, again, my favorite image of Betsy Braddock of all time with her with the blonde hair. And it's interesting that, again, Betsy in this dream sequence goes from being the child sitting in Jamie's lap to then becoming Jamie, showing that she's the person who is sort of like, she wants to be the take charge. She wants to be the adventure. And how Doug is, again, Doug and Betsy also had this really weird, like, not romance in the New Mutants books, which is kind of touched on at the beginning of 213 that we just talked about. It's kind of like a Colossus Kitty thing, but like the Doug Betsy thing, like they just kind of dropped it. Whereas like Kitty and Colossus, they did for a very long time. But like Doug kind of chides her and she's like, shut up, Doug. You're an idiot. Anyway. So then she gets to the body shop where they turn her Asian. And so then we get this glimpse into Betsy's mind where she's looking in a mirror and seeing not only like she feels like she's living in the shadow of Brian, but also like wants that for herself. And she's really she gets mad about the fact that she's like, well, why was it Brian and not me? Like, how come I didn't get to do it? How come he was one who was chosen, even though I was the one who wanted it? Mm-hmm. And they don't talk about it here, obviously, but it is interesting because it's like, because you weren't very good at it, Betsy. because you didn't train for it. Like when it came to you, you really didn't like you, because she's as I said, like she's reckless. She later in X-Men number one, she calls herself an action junkie. And like, that's really kind of Betsy. Like she just jumps right in and it's like, girl, stop doing that. So then we get a couple of vignettes of her going through and killing various X-Men in order to then pick up the different the different Mandarin rings. What I've also always loved about this issue, and I'm just going to kind of skip through, aside from Storm, which it's in, because at this point, Betsy would have believed Storm already to be dead, because we don't know that she's now a child living in Cairo, Illinois, being hunted by the Shadow King. Again, don't worry about it.
What?
This issue takes place after all the X-Men are forced through the Siege Perilous by Betsy. The Siege Perilous being like sort of like a get out of jail free card given to them by Roma. And the issue before this, before the Reavers attack them in the Outback and the X-Men are like, gotta go, Nanny comes. And again, we all love Nanny, she's crazy. But Nanny comes and kidnaps Storm. And off panel turns her into a child, and when Havoc, because Havoc is the worst, shoots Nanny's ship to try to bring it down, he like blasts off a complete side of the ship, and then in the wreckage that they find, Nanny has put a life model decoy of adult Storm dead in the wreckage. So now they all think that Storm is dead.
Oh, so they don't go after child form.
So they don't even know that like child Storm is a whole thing.
That's which, what Gambit?
Yes, yes. So, okay. So Gambit, so she becomes like a pickpocket in Cairo and runs into Gambit and they get attacked by the Shadow King. It's a whole other thing.
Okay.
Again, this whole era of X-Men, like the dispersal of the X-Men and then them slowly coming back together is just such a crazy time in X-Men, because it's like this book about this team that is not a team at this time. Like everybody is just everywhere and it's wild, which is why I love it. But one of the so aside from Storm, whom Betsy would believe to be dead at the time, every time we see one of the other X-Men that she forced through the Siege Perilous, which by the way she felt guilty for, but she's like either we're all gonna die or we all need to go through the Siege Perilous, like she's like it's either we're all dead, because that was one of the few glimpses of her precog powers in that issue where she has a vision of them all being dead.
So
she's like, we gotta go. And so they all kind of say their goodbyes, and that's also she like randomly kisses Havoc to psychically force him through the Siege Perilous, because he's the only one who's questioning her. Because also we should remember, when Havoc joins the X-Men in this period, Betsy's like, Havoc knows too much, we should just kill him.
No.
Like people now want to say that Betsy got her sort of like cold ruthlessness from canon and the body swap. It's like, no, bitch was always like, it's for the best of the team, he should just die. Like, but anyway, so she puts them all through the Siege Perilous. But in this, when she's going through collecting the Mandarin rings, when we see them, they're where they are, even though Betsy quote unquote wouldn't know, all of the X-Men are where they ended up post Siege Perilous. So Peter is in New York as an artist. That's where we end up finding him later in the X-Men series. And this is also like before we even know where the other X-Men are. So this is another little like Claremontian, like wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Remember how Betsy can see the future? So Dazzler is in LA as kind of a movie star now. Havoc is in Genosha, although, you know, and here he's being chased by the magistrates, but then we find out later in the Extinction Agenda that he is also a magistrate being brainwashed and whatever. We see Rogue has already fought Carol Danvers and they've killed each other. You know, little when we see Rogue later, she and Carol, the weird like Carol body double clone thing that gets taken over by the Shadow King again, don't worry about it too much. they've already sort of killed each other. And then when she goes to find Brian, instead of her having to kill her brother, she is then put face to face again with like sort of her worst nightmare, the Slaymaster, who defeated her so terribly in the past. And as the hand people are observing her in this sort of fantasy, we see that like their psychic person you know, goes crazy, and Betsy is really like almost killing herself in her own fantasy, which again, sort of, in my opinion, again, this is me reading too much into the X-Men, who knew, like she feels guilty about, you know, her shortcomings. She feels like she's not good enough, and that's why Slaymaster is sort of like her end boss in her own video game. So as she continues to fight and then she gains the confidence and power in herself, she shatters that image, realizes that it is Mandarin underneath the Slaymaster, and then is going to crush him with the rock, but instead uses her own psychic powers to make him kill himself with his own rings, which is pretty cunt, like, to be honest.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, did you forget that I'm also like psychic?
There's a reminder.
And then behind her in these images, we see it is Mojo and Spiral who have sort of been there the whole time.
Like gleeful and maniacal.
Yeah, yes. And so like as we get through like the retcons and stuff, it like I remember being so confused as to why Spiral and Mojo were there when I was like first reading these, not remembering that like she already had a history with them. And also periodically throughout Claremont's run, we get glimpses of the Body Shop and Spiral, and like it's a very successful, like sort of like the power broker in the comics as well. It's just like, oh, this person got these weird power upgrades. It was either the Body Shop or the power broker. Like supervillains just went and found like the supervillain people and like paid a bunch of money, and now they have these upgraded powers, which is kind of cool. Because also, it's interesting that like they bring it up kind of in this issue, but like Psylocke still has like the mojo implanted eyes, which comes up later. But then we find out that like, again, we're not going to look too deep into it, because I can't remember if it's ever been referenced when she's in the Asian body, but technically those eyes stay in her original body, which we now know is inhabited by canon. So it's kind of like, even though quote unquote the X-Men TV show that is being played by like them watching Betsy, actually they're not watching Betsy anymore from this point out. Again, don't look too deep into it, don't worry about it, but again, it's just like a very cool character study of Betsy, again showing her doing all like kind of like a lot of the callbacks of like her character, things that have like happened with her, and showing how she ruthlessly will try to always come out on top, which is very cool. Yeah, sorry, I think
it's a really great insight that you give into your favorite issue, and you sort of explained why. And I mean, you didn't mention Really Hot Colossus as a reason, but it's a reason I love this issue.
Right. Well, I mean, Really Hot Colossus is always the reason. Yes. Always the reason. And I absolutely love Hot Colossus. Again, Colossus should only ever wear the little red bikini bottoms as a costume ever.
Yes.
That's all. Yes. That's not even a debate. Like, yes.
That's all you should ever have. That should be just standard issue. This is all you get. Sorry.
Sorry, we don't have anything left. It's just me.
We don't have enough fabric. It was all spent on just this.
Right. So since we're kind of going canonically, I'm gonna do my honorable mention, and I won't do a deep dive like I just did with this issue. But the next issue canonically that I did want to kind of mention is X-Men 31.
Okay.
Which is the retcon to the retcon, because when Fabian Nicieza did, I believe it's originally like X-Men 20-ish around then, he retconned the fact that no, it wasn't plastic surgery, it's a full body swap, and there is now an Asian woman who lives in Betsy's original body, who also believes that she is Betsy Braddock, and this Asian woman is like this spy imposter. And we get the sort of convoluted story through that first little arc of this Asian woman found a stranded Betsy on the shores, and when she touched her, their minds sort of like blah, and then she believed that she was Betsy, and that's who then eventually was picked up by the Mandarin and joined the X-Men. And so the other woman was then found by Lord Nyorin, I believe is his name, and trained to then be his assassin, yada, yada, yada.
So then both got trained to be assassins.
Yes.
So, coincidentally.
Coincidentally. Well, so again, there were like, when I remember first reading that issue and I was like, this doesn't make a lot of sense. I was like, this doesn't, like, because again, 256 is like my favorite issue. So I'm like, even though I like the fact that they brought back British Betsy, the body, I was like, like a lot of this like doesn't make sense. And again, I was hoping like eventually they would do it. Well, 10 issues later, he tries to recon his recon. And really we find out that Spiral and her infinite machinations of just being a bitch, and just, you don't interrupt the dance. Like, she was like, no, I hate all of you, and so I'm gonna fuck with everybody. And what I'm gonna do is, we have these two women. So we find out that Canon is this this Asian assassin who had this affair with Matsuo, and she falls off a cliff, and he wants to bring her back to life. So he goes to Spiral, but they also find this, unconscious amnesiac purple-haired psychic woman, and he's like, hey, can we use this psychic woman's like powers and like life energy or whatever to revive my dead girlfriend? And Spiral's like, sure, I can definitely do that, crossing all six of my arms, fingers behind my back. And really what we find out in these issues is that Spiral just sort of like put both women in a blender and just hit go, and then went, I'm going to take what this handful and put it in this body, and I'm going to take this handful and I'm going to put it in this body. So both women are sort of both. And then through this issue, it's really more of a canon story than a Betsy story, but it really kind of like solves a few of those plot lines, like part of I'll say revanche. Part of her sort of like independence that she finally rips out the mojo eyes and leaves them for Betsy. And then she goes to Matsuo because in, you know, it's revealed that she has the legacy virus, because I think it was also kind of like, listen, we're tired of having like these two purple haired Psylocke women. And like, I think the readers are getting confused. So like, just kill the white one.
Because I was on those people. I'm like, who is Revanche?
Yes. And because we reviewed X-Men Annual 2. Yes. Where
yes.
She reveals that she has the legacy virus.
Right.
And I was like, who are you? Aren't you Psylocke? But aren't you also Betsy? But are you Clunin? Like,
yes. So I think they were just like, listen, we got a Nyx one. Let's wrap this up. And so they kind of put like a little bit of a neat bow on it. And I thought after, so what happens is after Matsuo Mercy kills Canon, which again, Canon being the a Japanese deity of mercy, that is what her name means. And her being mercy killed by Matsuo, her psychic impression then goes to Betsy, and Betsy sort of like feels like truly herself, quote unquote. And so now she is fully Betsy Braddock inside this other body. And so that sort of like leaves it there for a while. It gets messier as time goes on, and I'm kind of glad that they are now fully swapped back. But anyway, so that's sort of my honorable mention, just sort of like trying to clean up the story, but it still kind of leaves it a bit of a mess. But so the third issue that I chose, which is kind of like a weird pick, but I really like this issue. I think it's crazy and wild, which again is always fun. It's also other world nonsense, which as we know is also always fun.
Yes.
So it's Uncanny X-Force number what is the actual number of this issue?
24.
Yes, 24. Thank you.
Not gonna lie, I thought this was also part of you trolling me.
Really?
Get into later.
Yeah, we'll get into it. So as we go through the issue, we do get a good explanation. Like, the title page gives us a good lead-in for where we currently are. Sort of.
So yeah. It is sort of like, I would have kind of chosen this whole arc because also comics today are written very much to be read as full arcs that are then trade paperbacked. Like, that is the way that comic books are written now. So it is kind of hard to jump in the middle. Whereas like issues used to be a little more freestanding, or at least like you can kind of pick up like what's going on. But like the way comics are written now, it's really hard to sort of like jump in the middle. So kind of where we are is Betsy is now a part of X-Force. They're sort of the X-Men kill squad. The team members include Phantom X, Wolverine, the Nightcrawler from the AOA universe, which, listen, I love some nostalgia too, but can we just let AOA just be done? Like, it was a great story, but we need to stop retreading it. Like, the sort of era that this then bleeds into, like, the Exterminated story arc. Hate it. But anyway, so Otherworld is in danger. We get introduced to the Skinless Man, which also shout out to Jay Cosmic for his Skinless Man cosplay that he did at Uncanny Experience. We find out the Skinless Man was sort of kidnapped by James Braddock, the Braddock twins' dad, and skinned because he has this like really awesome skin. and turned it into the bullets that then Phantom X uses. Again, don't worry about it too much. We're not gonna like that's really not why we're here. But it's a whole thing. But so Otherworld's in trouble because there is this goat sorcerer guy who is trying to kill everybody and end all the multiverse and yada yada yada. So really, why I chose this issue doesn't really have to do a lot with any of the stuff that I just said. The reason that I chose this book is because it once again shows, so as we get to the end of this story, Betsy, as she's fighting the goat god sort of by herself and gets finally a glimpse inside of the goat's mind, she realizes, fuck, like, I know who this is, and he needs to be stopped 100%. Also in this issue is sort of, it's also sort of a redemption arc for Jamie, who is now in Otherworld with Brian, helping him fight. And throughout the battle that they're doing, Jamie and Brian are like, it's so awesome. We get to be brothers again and we're fighting in arms and it's so great. And like, Brian is so happy because Jamie was always like his, like the big brother that he looked up to. And like, he knew that like they ended things on bad terms way back in the day. And then when Jamie came back and was fucking crazy and like, you know, and then Jamie died a couple of times again, don't worry about it. Like, you know, he was just like, we just ended things so badly. So like, they're finally happy to be like, we're both heroes again. And like, we're using our powers together and like being awesome. And so Betsy, because she can't get there fast enough. She and Phantom X are trying to get to the battlefield quickly. Cause they're like, she's like, I know how to end this, but like, I can't get there fast enough. So she telepathically reaches out to Brian and she goes, hey, this is awful, but the goat is a future version of Jamie that has gone insane and wants to destroy the entirety of creation. So if he gets into the tower, so the tower is a shout back to Excalibur. When Merlin developed the multiverse, he created the Excalibur Lighthouse Tower across all of the multiverse. And that's sort of like the nexus of all of like the multiverse, Otherworld energies, yada, yada, yada. So like there is one again in Otherworld. And so if the goat can get inside to the lighthouse, he can literally destroy the entirety of the multiverse. So, and he's kind of already in there and he's killing like one reality after another. So like billions of lives are being destroyed as time goes on. And Betsy's just like, hey, you need to kill Jamie because the goat is a future version of him. And Brian's like, no, I can't, because Brian always wants to try to do the good thing. And because he did such like this terrible thing to Jamie before, he's like, I can't do it. There's got to be another way. And so Betsy, knowing that she has to be the one to make the horrible sacrifice, takes over Brian's brain and says, Brian, close your eyes. And she snaps Jamie's neck.
Oh.
And ending the threat to the multiverse, saving billions and billions and billions and billions of lives by killing her own brother. And Brian, at the end of the story, Brian is sort of like, I don't know if I can ever forgive you. And she's like, it's okay, Brian. I know you wanted to be the hero. And so you got to be.
No.
Yeah. So hold on. What's the actual thing she says at the end? It's such a bitchy thing to say. And I love it. What does she say? She says, millions of souls were being consumed every second. There was no other way. And you know that, but you made me do it. So you get to stay the good guy. And it's just, it's such, because like at this point, Betsy has gotten fairly dark. she's like, I've seen some shit and I make the hard choices and, you know, it had to be done and you weren't willing to do it. So again, in this Uncanny X-Force book, like, This is like the X-Men kill squad. Like, she's like, no, that's what this team is for. Like, we're the ones out here doing the dirty work to keep people safe because no one else is willing to do it. And they want to keep the quote, good X-Men name clean. And so she's like, yeah, but you made me do it. So there we go. And then like in the next issue, we get a little bit of a brief Betsy, Brian, and he kind of goes off on her again. And she's just like, yeah, I'm gonna go. So he tries to talk to her, and then there's like these panels of silence, and she just turns around to look at him, and he says, "Never mind." And it's very like, ooh, the twins are fighting, and it's really cool. But so again, it's not really so much for like the overarching story. You need to like have a lot of context to what's happening. But like that's the reason that I chose that issue, is because it just sort of shows where Betsy has progressed up until this point, where she's like, no, I'm making like the extra hard decisions.
Yeah.
And it just sort of like jumps from like each of these books where it's like, she realizes that like, in order to save everybody, I need to make the hard choice. And that's just one of the reasons that I love her.
To go back to what you said about AOA and how it just needs to die. There's a great example in this issue as well. The offensively straight Iceman.
right.
Oh,
no one needs that. And so like, that's when I was like, oh, you're trolling me. Like, Iceman is my favorite, and it's Nightcrawler killing him. shoving him into a fiery furnace.
I mean, that's also kind of awesome. And like, but it's one of the reasons that I didn't like this sort of like era of comics in general, is that again, like everything needed to be like super dark and twisted. And it's like the AOA already happened like 20 years before. Like we can just kind of leave it as is, but like they kept making it darker and more horrible. And darker and more horrible. And also kind of around this time was also like the Ultimate Comics, where they just kept making it darker and more horrible. And it's like they were writing themselves into a corner where only horrible things can happen. And that's why I think the Krakoan era was such a breath of fresh air, even though we're kind of back there again where like everything's horrible. For a while it was like, okay, I can kind of like take a breath for a minute and just like enjoy these characters sort of having this good time living on this island and whatever. It was just sort of like this very lovely part of being like, oh, okay, we get to breathe again.
That's why I liked Legion of X so much. And like, it's sort of focus on culture and also healing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really nice of like, it's okay to pull yourself back together again. Like, dust will take care of you in this mindscape.
Right.
Like, also good use of dust.
Yeah. So I think this makes me want to read more Betsy in several different ways. I think the predominant one, I need to pick that Captain Britain omnibus back up and keep reading it, because I'm like a quarter of the way through or so. So I really want to pick that up and see how she progresses throughout that initial run when Claremont first created her.
I like the origins a lot.
Yeah.
So one of my favorite things about the original, so like when it went from being Captain Britain to then being called Daredevils for a while in the Marvel UK, when she comes back as like the model / agent of Strike. So the original books were black and white.
Mm-hmm.
So they weren't colored until much later when they were reprinted. So in the dialogue, it's like mentioning it like every other phrase, sort of like Psylocke always talking about like the totality of my psychic powers when she would like do her knife, and like it's very like Claremontian, like you have to like reintroduce the character on every panel because whatever. They always talk about Betsy's hair being purple, like they mention it so many times on panel. And I learned that from a friend of mine, Nico Action, who runs X's for Show. He and I met years ago, but when he first told me that, I'm like, yeah, they do talk about her hair being purple, and it's like, yeah, I can see it, like it's in, like her hair is purple, I get it. But then like knowing that context of it was in black and white at the time, so you have to say it in order for people to get it, it's so funny reading it now, being like, god, we get it, Brian, her hair is purple.
Yeah, where do you want to read more Betsy?
I think like where she's filling in for that team and like trying to be the team telepath, like
so Outback era.
I feel like when a character is stretched thin like that, but then also like Sabretooth comes crashing through, like all the setup for that, I feel like is the sort of character development origin that I really like.
So it's a really good like arc for her. So again, like that issue is her first. So like in the next kind of issues is where the X-Men are really trying to go into hiding, because they know that they're very vulnerable right now. The Marauders are still coming for them. And again, there's the whole thing of like Havoc trying to like look for the X-Men because in context, Polaris is then kidnapped by the Marauders and taken over by Malice, but Havok only knows that she's been kidnapped. So he then goes to the X-Men for help, being like, hey, my girlfriend's missing. I need help. And so he shows up at the mansion, and the X-Men continually have Psylocke like fuck with his brain to like make him forget that he was there. But because the only thing that he knows to do is like go to the X-Men for help when like weird superhero shit is happening, he keeps going back. And so there's this dialogue that Betsy, this line that Betsy has where she's like, if I try to erase his memories one more time, it's gonna like kill him. So he knows too much at this point. We should just kill him. And like everyone else is like, probably not, Betsy. which also then sets up for the entire Outback era, Alex's distrust of her. Like he's always like, I don't know about this British lady with the purple hair. She kind of gives me like the weird vibes. Like there's something about her that I'm just not, I don't like her. I don't know what it is. Oh, it's because she said that they should kill me. Like that's
there, like, is there a reckoning of how much brain scrambling was done to him?
I'm trying to remember. I can't remember if it's in this collection or not. It's not. It must be in like the issue right after my collection happens. I wish I could like read you the actual thing. But it's one of the reasons that when they get to the point of needing to take the Siege Perilous, why he's questioning Betsy's choice to do it. He's like, I don't trust you. Like, he's like, there's something about you that I still just don't trust. And she's like, don't worry about it. She kisses him again, psychically forces him, and then shoves him through the Siege Perilous. The Reavers show up and she's like, fuck off, suckers, and then jumps through. It's kind of like a cool thing. Cause like Allison at that point, she's like, Longshot's already disappeared. I don't know what he just went to. She's like, I definitely don't want to die, and I'm too pretty for prison. So I'm not true. That's another like good issue. And again, like Betsy making the hard choice for everyone else because like there I think originally like Colossus was like, we can stay here and fight, and she's like, or we could not die. Because the ones who go through the siege, well, so Rogue does previously when they fight Master Mold. And then it's Colossus, Betsy, Havok, and Dazzler that go through the Siege Perilous. And at that point, like, Wolverine has already been, like, put on, like, the big X cross and where Jubilee finds him to rescue him. Yeah, like, again, weird, wild times for the X-Men in that era.
And the Siege Perilous just sort of like scrambles you up and puts you back together again?
So the way Roma kind of explains it is that it's a fresh start. So you go through getting your innermost desire, but also sort of like a fresh, so like anytime any of the people that went through it, when they re-enter where they are, it's they have amnesia. So they don't know why they're there, but like everybody kind of gets like this weird twisted version because it's magic. And as we know, magic is never, it's never without a price. So Betsy ends up in Southeast Asia, which again, kind of also says, Betsy's always wanted to be a fighter. Like that's kind of like always been her thing. And so it's like, so was she always destined to be like put in this Asian body? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's mm-hmm. weird that like that's where the Siege Perilous puts her. Dazzler ends up in LA, where then she kind of becomes a celebrity again, but then gets this crazy stalker who tries to kill her. So then she goes into hiding again. So like she kind of gets what she wants, but then like needs to backtrack. Colossus ends up in New York and is sort of like a successful painter for a while, but then gets roped up in all of, you know, the X-Men nonsense again. He dates Callisto, who is hot for a minute. Don't worry about it. and then Alex ends up on Genosha, which in my opinion is also like a weird sort of like character exploration of Havok, where it's like his dream is to like just be having someone tell him what to do and have him not worry about like what it is he's doing or like what's happening.
Moral implications or anything.
Yeah. Cause he ends up being like brainwashed into being a magistrate, and it's like on Genosha, which is, as we all know, is like the worst place. And so it's just very strange that like that sort of like his innermost desire to like just not have to make decisions for himself.
Oh, it's very Jamie Madrox.
Yes. Yes.
All right. So, Demanda, this is coming out in mid-March. You have posted your schedule for this spring, and it is busy. Yes. So what do you have coming up, like end of March, going into April, where people can catch up with you?
So I am so for those who are in the DMV, I'm a part of a monthly show, which, fingers crossed, we can get it kind of started. It is a live D&D drag show called Divas and Death Saves. So that is out in Culpeper, Virginia, which I know is a bit of a trek, but it's going to be a really awesome show. I'm really excited to sort of like get back into like playing D&D, but getting to do it for an audience. It should be a great time. So that's happening on the last Monday of every month. But also, since this is coming out like sort of like mid-March, at the end of March, I'm super excited. I'm going to be going to WonderCon for the first time in Anaheim, California. I'm a part of three cosplay groups. So like each day when people sort of were like, oh my God, Demanda, you're going to be here. You need to be a part of this cosplay group. So yeah. I'm going to be part of a Generation X cosplay group. The Hellfire Gala Walk, which I'm super excited about, and a Legion of Superheroes cosplay group. I also have been asked to bring two other looks for other various reasons, since I'm going to be out there and meeting a lot of people that I've been friends with on social media for so long. And we're like, we want to get some pictures together. Like, we don't know when else is going to happen. So hopefully I'll be creating a lot of content for everyone while I'm out in California that I'm really excited about. Also, throughout all of March, opening March 1st, actually, I designed and styled 26 wigs for a production of 9 to 5, the musical.
The bathtub?
The bathtub.
Yeah. the bathtub of me washing all of those wigs. I love that anytime I bring that up, people are like, oh my gosh, the bathtub full of wigs. Yes. Yes. So again, if you're in Southern Maryland, it would be great to see you guys out there. Also starting kind of at the end of March, beginning of April, kicking into full gear, I crazily agreed to be a part of the costuming team for a production of Dreamgirls, which I'm very excited to be a part of that. So again, follow me to find more information about that. I believe it doesn't open until like Memorial Day time. Okay. But that's super exciting. What else is happening? There's so many other things. I'm going to be getting ready to go to Portland, Oregon again to do the Homo Superior dance party X-Men drag show, which was so much fun last year and I get to do again. And then sort of like my big exciting fall thing is I get to go to the Uncanny Experience and hang out with you guys. So
yay! I'm super excited to see you.
Yeah, my cosplay spreadsheet is full. I have planned out every look from here until the Uncanny Experience. I also have a bunch of other cosplays that like I've planned but don't, and like already started the process with, but like I don't have anywhere to like wear them yet. So again, if you're following me on social media, either I might just save those to premiere at another event, or I might just do a photo shoot with them and I'll be posting them on social media. But again, I have so much cool stuff coming. I'm very excited for this year and I'm very grateful to have the opportunities that I've been given. Oh, also I'm going to be on like 4 upcoming episodes of Grey Malkin Lane. Like Chad, I love Chad. It's so much fun working with him. But anytime he like finds out or like he sort of like rediscovers like this Z-list female character, he's like, Demanda. So then of course, like then I get excited for these characters. So then I am like, oh, well now I need to do a look for them because like that's kind of the thing that I do when I do these things with Chad. So he keeps feeding me all of these characters that like I need to do. And I'm super excited for that. And again, thank you guys so much for having me again and letting me talk about Betsy and rambling on forever about her.
And speaking of Greg Malkin Lane, I subbed in for you in the script reading for March. Yes. So I framed it as I was Joan Crawford taking over for Christina.
My God, which is also such an iconic thing.
So I did Beast in a way that... you probably never would have. Beast is an evil gay under me.
Yes.
Which, yes. I mean, Joan Crawford was an evil gay too. So, yes. Everyone can go to the episode that Chad released probably 2 weeks ago by the time this is posted. It is X-Men Unlimited number 3, where I filled in for you as Beast. It is, it was a wild ride. It was a lot of fun.
Yes. I was so sad to miss it because, of course, I love doing those. Those are so much fun, those script readings. But I'm very glad that he got you to fill in to do Beast some justice.
Yeah.
but also I can't remember if I've told you guys, but you know that I'm a huge Joan Crawford gal and I have a Joan Crawford tattoo. I can't remember if I've mentioned.
No. That is wonderful. So I'm glad that I made the reference here, but also in that Grey Malkin episode, I was like, I am Joan Crawford taking over for Christina.
Yes. Oh, so iconic. Yes. I do have a Joan Crawford tattoo. I have a Joan Crawford throw pillow that lives in my living room. Yeah. I love Joan Crawford.
So everyone, as Demand mentioned, follow her on social media. Which platforms are you currently on in this hellscape of social media?
So I'm on most of them. The main ones are Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter/X. But I am also on Threads, but mostly like my Threads or Blue Sky are and TikTok. TikTok is now very rarely, like, anytime, like, I get a good video, I'll post something onto Facebook, especially, like, of a performance, but I don't really do, like, the TikTok things, because, like, what I used to do on TikTok isn't really popular anymore, like, the sort of, like, lip syncing to, like, quotes and stuff, it's not as really, like, as popular as it used to be. It's mostly, like, story times and, like, shopping that people do on TikTok these days. But anytime I get a good performance video, I'll put it on there. But, pretty much, if you're someone who's followed me, Instagram and Facebook are pretty much the same. Anything that I post there, I will post to X. But if you want like sort of like deep insights to some of like my crazy like thoughts and one-liners, I'll sometimes just post those on Twitter/X, which are always sort of like a good time. At least it's always so funny that anything that I think is sort of a throwaway weird thought, especially about the X-Men, that I put on Twitter, that's the thing that gets like likes and like retweets and like messages and stuff. Like the time that I just like randomly was like, well, Chad mentioned Gatecrasher, so she's on the list for 2025. I was like, oh my god, Gatecrasher, and I got like 300 likes or whatever, and I'm like, oh okay, so all the 300 gays who love Gatecrasher saw this. which also kind of ironically and coincidentally and like really cool, like, you know, I've been talking about Gatecrasher fairly frequently because like, again, like I really want to finish her on or for 2025. So over here, if you guys can see, so I got a Cal Dodd signed action figure of Wolverine. And remember the old, so it's like a vintage action figure, like from the 90s. And remember, they have the trading cards in the back of them from the X-Men trading card series. Guess what trading card is behind Wolverine? It's Gatecrasher. Like, it's a cosmic sign, obviously. Like, so yes. She's definitely is going to be coming in 2025. Because again, my dance card is full. I cannot do one more thing in 2024. Like, I already have so much stuff that like I want to do and want to complete. So I'm gonna say it for anyone who wants to like support me, or people who like want to suggest looks for me, which again is always lovely and appreciated, and of course like I love input from people who enjoy the stuff that I do, but if you really want me to do a look, pay me.
Yes.
like there's Venmo, Cash App, PayPal, like it's which is the same as my social media, at Demanda Martini, DMANDAMARTINI. I mean, I will be happy to do stuff with a budget, because my budget I work out to like fit the things that like I want to do. But if you really want me to do something and you're like, hey, it would be really cool if you did a share from Clueless, cool. So send me some money so I can go buy the fabric, and I will be happy to do that for you.
Those wigs don't just walk in the door on their own.
So also, I sometimes think that people don't understand that like there's a lot of stuff that I can't just buy off the rack. Especially to like get it to be like really fitted. So like all of those dye subs that I purchase, all of those Zentai suits, I pay extra to have them especially made to my measurements because my measurements aren't a normal person's measurements. Like I pad and cinch and do all that stuff. So like my measurements are not a typical person's measurements. Yeah. So it's like, no, I have a very specific body that I need to clothe, which is why I get so many things tailor-made and you know, like tailor made for me. So it's like, and that's expensive, like, you know, an extra $20 to get something, to get one of those dye subs tailor made, that adds up. So anyway, not to like get too deep into all of that, but just a little insight into cosplay and drag, like this hobby is expensive. So
it absolutely is, but you're making the most of it. We appreciate you being our friend and coming on here, telling us all about Betsy Braddock. Everyone go follow Demanda. If you aren't already, go run, don't walk.
It's so funny. Like, so obviously I love being on your show. I love being on Grey Malkin Lane. I've been on one episode of House of X. And of course, like I used to do Power of X-Men a lot, but again, Paul's schedule is also effing insane. It's so funny. Anytime I'm on one of those shows and you know, they're like, oh, where can people find you? I'm like, by this point, I think I'm just talking to the people that already follow me and all of these different things.
Like, I don't know if people who listen to us don't already know who you are.
Yeah, I mean, we name drop you like every episode. It's so true. But also, if you cannot get out and see Demanda in person, which you absolutely should, if you can support local drag, support your local performers. Everyone does such a great job and they do it for the love of doing it. Right. Like you mentioned, like it costs money and time to do these things. So, right.
So like I had a gig last night and I, randomly, and again, feel free to cut this if this is like boring to your audience, but I had the very long conversation, a guy who came to the show last night, he and I are both from the same small town that I still live in, and his family is very connected to the theater that I work at here, and we've known of each other forever, but have just never like met before, really. And so like, we got to like sit down and like really talk about it. And like, he's trying to start doing drag. He's also like a theater person and like, you know, wanting to be fulfilled artistically, which for artists who know, it's like, sometimes you just get into like this rut where like you feel like you need to do something new. You feel like you need to try something else. And we just had like a really long talk about like how doing art is so awesome and we love it and we do it because we love it. But on the flip side, doing art is so hard, especially when it's so underappreciated in a monetary sense. Everybody loves art. Everybody wants art, but people don't want to pay for art. Mm-hmm. And which then can translate into people love drag. People want to see drag, but people don't want to pay for drag. So like, you know, people forget that, like, you know, I'm out here doing this bar gig for $50 and tipping me $1 and being like, oh my gosh, I love your drag, like, let's take a picture. And I'm like, you gave me $1. Like, no.
Yeah.
You want a picture? $5. Again, I would never do that again. For those people who know me, like, know that I am not that kind of person. I love people. I'm an extrovert. I love entertaining people. I love meeting people and talking to them. And I will always be, you know, I will always be as professional and as lovely as I can be in the moment. But like, sometimes, like when you're sitting at your house cooking your last thing of ramen and you're like, okay, how are we going to get through the rest of this month? Like, you know, it's just like there's sometimes where you think about that and you're like, okay, like, you know, what else? And again, we're not going to get too deep into all of that, but like it's definitely a struggle out there for artists, especially in this season. Winter is so hard for drag because it's post holidays. So everyone's trying to like either stay sober, save money, like, you know, plan their summer vacation. So, you know, all of that stuff. So it's like people aren't going out and going to see drag shows. People aren't going out to like, well, people are barely going out to the movies anymore anyway. Mm-hmm. But like, it's just, it's just hard sometimes. I still love it. I still want to do it. Again, and I do it for the love of it. But like quite literally, this guy Matt last night was like, so why do you do it? Like what is it about it that you love? And like, why do you do it? And I'm like, because I love it. I love being dressed up. I love entertaining people. When it comes to cosplay, I love doing like these random weird characters, because then I get to talk about the character and hopefully get people interested in that character. Or, and if it's like, for example, the pink Betsy suit, where when people think Psylocke, they think of like the Asian ninja, and they're like, what is this? And I'm like, it's Psylocke. And they're like, what? And I'm like, yeah, this was like her original like nonsense, and she thought that she was going to be a superhero in this stupid frilly nonsense with like this weird big Gibson hairdo. Anyway, again, thank you for having me. Thank you for letting me ramble.
Absolutely. Of Anytime course. You want to come on, you are welcome. And everyone, you can follow us on social media, X Factor Files Podcast. We hope that you dive into some Betsy Braddock and catch some feels for this woman who has been through it the past 40 years. Until next time, we will see you later.
Stay warm.
And thanks for listening. Bye.